Okay, first thing I'd like you to do is to give your name.
No?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
We'll get over this after we get started.
Okay, my name is Carolyn Oliver.
And your address?
My address is 84 Clifton Vale, London, Ontario.
Your phone number?
My phone number is 434-8600.
Okay, your date of birth?
March 10, 1949.
You're 2 years younger than I am. You're just a whippersnapper.
Don't say that to me.
You are. I turned 40 this year.
Nearly everybody I've met, I've always been older than them.
Well, you've got it now. And where were you born?
I was born on the Cape Croker Indian Reservation.
Why don't you give the date of the interview on there? Today is February 19th. They won't hear it from me.
Today is February 19,
1987. Okay. Stop. Carolyn, can you tell me what crafts you've been involved in?
The first crafts I've started out with was beading on the loom, which is a very easy craft to learn, but the designs are the hardest part to learn. I went from beading to making chokers, which is women can wear them as well as the men, you know. And I do belts, earrings, necklaces, bracelets, doilies, headbands, purses, outfits, shawls. Right now I'm trying to get into making blankets. That's the hardest one.
Blankets using beads?
Yeah. No. Blankets as in making, like, quilts.
Quilts.
Yeah. Another thing that I'm doing right now, which I don't really like to talk about because not too many people do this, is I'm working on canvas, which is I'm doing bead work on canvas. At the same time, like, if I put a picture down, if I feel like it needs paint in there, I'll put paint, but then the rest would be all done in beadwork.
Have you ever seen anyone else who did that kind of work before?
Just once, and that was in the States. But it has been around before. I think it was back in the 60s when I first seen it. I'm not too sure. But it wasn't it wasn't fully in at that time. So I got the idea of doing all the canvas in bead. And what I wanted to do is do a mural all in beads. But maybe one day.
You need to get a Canada Council grant to pay for the beads. Mm. When you think, now you also teach language.
I don't teach it. I'm learning it.
You're learning it.
I'm learning it. I have a woman from Wequemecon. Her name is Dorothy Kennedy. And she teaches Odawa. She doesn't teach Ojibwe, but it's Ojibwe and Odawa. The language just differs in a little way. We've had this course now almost 7 months, 8 months. And the first group had passed phase one. We're in phase two where we're making sentences now, which is a lot harder. And we have new students in right now that are in phase one but are working with phase two students because, like, we are the teachers now to that group. And the program's been going along quite well.
Why was it important for you to learn the languages?
To learn the language? Because it's like a dying art. It's like any kind of native heritage. Once it dies, we will die if we don't continue this. And the children that are growing up now, when they have children, they won't know what it was like if we don't continue to teach it. And to me, it means a lot because my grandmother taught me at an early age. I used to speak Indian very well. And then because of the residential schools at that time, that a lot of Native children were being placed into it, not just because the mother died or the father died or they didn't have anybody to look after them. It was just parents got sick, and at that time they were going through a depression, and a lot of people couldn't afford to have kids. And at that time there was maybe in a family 20 children to a family. I understood it as my mom saying that the more children you had, the more of a woman you were. That was their concept at that time. Today it's not. Today is, I wish I never had more than two. But like everything, it can get phased out very easy. And if you don't keep it up, then there won't be Anishinaabe land or Anishinaabe people. And who's going to preserve the earth? Because the earth is dying now as it is. And we're in the seventh generation now. And the seventh generation is the teachers. This is the last of the teachers. Once we die, it dies with us. So everything that our parents or our grandparents taught us is going to go back with us. So rather, you know, it was a gift, and the gift is to be shared with our people.
Of the work that you do, is there certain work that you value more than other work?
Out of the work that I do? Yes, there is. I can say when I have a dream, sometimes I have a dream at night, and I dream of the work that I'm supposed to put down, and I'll put it down in my beads. A lot of the colors that I use in my beadwork has meanings, and only I know those meanings, or another Indian person that does beadwork will know the meanings of the color. For instance, if a painter drew a picture on the wall and drew a bear or a rattle or a drum or children playing or the sun or the moon, each one of them has a significance in his life. So anything that an artist does is always coming from that person. And each picture that's painted or each beadwork that's done is part of that person, what life he had before, right up till the life he has today. And hopefully maybe what life is going to be in the end. It all depends on the person that's doing the work. And I guess I can say the beadwork that I've really enjoyed doing was the beadwork on my outfits, because I feel that's coming from me, and the colors were given to me to use. You will not see one outfit the same unless they're twins or somebody decided they like it. But a majority of the time, if you go to a powwow, you'll find that a lot of people will have separate colors on their outfits, and that's because they're a separate person. They're by themselves.
How did you learn beading?
How did I learn beading? I was about 14, I guess, and I met an Indian woman, and I was watching her do beadwork. And I used to remember as a child that my grandmother did some beadwork, but I never knew what it was called at that time. And I've always thought that, gee, that would be nice work to learn. It never entered my mind that I would totally go into the art itself. But because of my grandmother and this woman, and her talking to me, stating the same things I'm telling you now, is that it is a dying art, and she was teaching. I learned from her, and then her idea of teaching was you get showed once, and after that you're on your own. So I more or less had to pick it up on my own as well. I think it goes through the ears as you progress, your beadwork progresses. So it's taking me almost 11 years, and out of 11 or 12 years that it's taken me to learn beadwork, I think in the past 4 years I've become known as a bead teacher.
Now, why did you, you've talked about sort of who taught you and when you learned, but why? Why did you want to learn it? What did it mean to you when you saw it being done by your grandmother and by this Indian woman?
I think because it was, in a way, it was teaching me who I was. Finding out exactly where I stood, because when I was small, there was no one there. I didn't remember too much. I don't remember too much of my childhood past. But when I turned 14, I found that I didn't know I was Indian. And when I knew, all the ideas came into my mind to learn the craft itself. And I figured that's where I'm going to find out who I am. It's like going to a powwow and never participating in dancing. And when you do finally get up there, even if you're not good, you're finding yourself. You're finding out who you are and not always wondering. How come you're at a powwow? How come you're standing here? There has to be a reason why you're here. And because you've been out on your own all your life, and you never known nothing about yourself. I've had people tell me, you're not Indian, you're white. And I've had whites tell me, well, you're Indian, and you're Indian, you're not white. So from the Indian people, I would get, I was more white. And from the whites, I would get, well, you're Indian. So I never knew who I was. I never knew where I belonged in the society because of that reason. And seeing this beadwork done and finally realizing I was an Indian person, that I knew that if I put everything into it, that I would get something out of it. And what I got out of it was who I was, who I am today.
Have you noticed changes beadwork since you first started, like as far as materials go, or your own expression, or the kind of designs and symbols and colors that you use?
I think that everybody that does beadwork, not just me, after a certain length of time, when you go through the beading itself, when you get there to a point, you find that I've done this, I already know what it's about, so let's try something new. So you go into a modern style version of beadwork. Because you find that a majority of the people that are buying your beadwork is not Indian. Because Indian people, majority of them, depending on where they're from, know how to do beadwork, and they'll do their own designs and put their own meaning in there. But if you're working basically with a non-native society, then you have to try to work around your beadwork to please them as well. And you'll find that you'll get compliments on it, and other times you won't. And like I said, the colors do have meaning. There is significance. If I am selling, let's say at a mall, I will take only the ones that are meant for the non-native people. If I go to a powwow, then I will take only the things that are meant for the native people. Because at a powwow, it's actually structured for native people to gather. It is a native culture. It's a gathering where all the people come together and get to know one another as a brother, as a sister, as a mother, father. Even though you have your own relatives, all those other people out there are related to you in some way. And it all depends on the way you chose or choose to see them.
Are there symbols for you in the work that you do for Native people that have great importance to you or have come to have great importance to you?
There is. It's just like the animals outside or the trees that grow or the grass that grows on the ground. The circle is a symbol of finally meeting the end, like your wedding ring, for instance. You take your wedding ring, it's a circle, and as long as that circle is completed, then that you'll always be as one. But if that circle is broken, you will take that ring off, and you won't be as one anymore. And so the circle has a lot of meaning to the Ojibwe people. I don't know if too many Native people up here use the circle as a symbol. Some use two lines and seven dots. It all depends on where you're coming from. The floral design was mainly used by the Ojibwe nation. Geometrically, once in a while, depending on what area you're from. It could be from any area. I guess the circle is the best known design that people would use, that I would use, or the floral design. Geometrically, I don't use them too often, unless it's something like if I'm doing an outfit and I decide, well, I don't feel like having to use my circles in my work. What I will use is geometrical design.
Are there any symbols that are seen as symbols mostly for women?
No, because I don't think so, because of the fact that the floral design you will find on the men as well as you will find on the women. Geometrical design the women will use as much as the men will use. So I don't think there is just any one type of symbol that you would use. Even drawing a picture of a deer or a bear, because there was a clan system going way back that if you were a bear and somebody thought that it was important for people to know that you were from a bear clan, then you would use a bear clan design. But then also other people would use it if they're from the bear clan design. They would use that design.
How do you think the Native community feels about your work, and how do they show how they feel about your work?
Well, I think I'll have to answer the last question first, because I get asked to go to malls and demonstrate my work there. Or I get asked to go to workshops that are Native orientated. And a lot of the calls that come into me is directed towards me from the center or from the people that know my work, that has bought my work. Or sometimes that the people that have bought my work, they turn around and they try to locate me, even if I'm far away. So that's a lot of ways that the community sort of tells me that my work is good. And I think in a lot of ways that's how come I learned that my work has been hasn't been for nothing. It's all been positive in the past 3 to 4 years, maybe 5 years at the most.
What about within your family?
My family. My oldest son wanted to learn how to do beadwork since he was 4 years old. And I feel that because he watched me as he was growing up doing the work, that I instilled in him a pride to continue it. And I think a lot of times that even today it shows in the work that he does. And my family is all sort of artists in their own way. They all have different types of traditional artwork that they do. My mom does string art. My brother does macrame, which is an art in one way, maybe not traditional Native art, but when you stop and think about it, every artist has its own. My sister does beadwork. My son does paintings. I do paintings. So a lot of it comes from watching me, so I feel that they're getting a lot from me.
Did your mother do beadwork?
She did very little beadwork. As a matter of fact, she recalls when her mother did beadwork, and I guess at that time she wasn't interested in beadwork. But lately she's been doing it because I think it's because that I'm sitting there doing it and she doesn't have nothing to do.
Are you aware of any traditional stories that talk about women's work, particularly their handwork?
Offhand, no. I probably came across it at one time. But offhand, no, I don't.
Do you remember any crafts from when you were younger that are not being done today?
Yeah, there is a lot of crafts. I guess the first one would be the dolls. On my reserve, the dolls were made quite differently than what they are today. The Six Nations has a doll that has no face on it. There's a story behind that. On my reserve, the dolls were made, and they were made out of corn husk, but not the same way they're made today. It was a very thrown together doll, and if they had little pieces of hide left over, they'd sew them right on so that the doll would have clothes to wear. There was no faces on the dolls as well, mainly because if you put a face on a doll and you give it to the child to play and the doll drops, that doll has a spirit inside and that spirit would get hurt. That was the idea behind the doll with no face. As long as it didn't have a face and you dropped the doll wouldn't feel the pain. We also had a rattle, which was made out of, there was a stick, and at the end of each stick there was like little bells. And the bells you wouldn't hear the jingle of the bells loudly like you do today. They would be just like little, somebody touching a glass with a spoon. And that's gone. Today, even, I guess you could even say the bow and arrow is gone, because it's not being made by hand, it's being produced by machines. There's a few other things, but right offhand I couldn't tell you.
Why do you think the crafts aren't being done?
The crafts aren't being done today because a lot of the women that are living in the city, so to speak, don't have time to teach their children the crafts. I think, too, it's because the majority of the women are working now and they are the second breadwinner, so to speak.